Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
It's widely accepted that there is a huge need for church planting in Europe, but people are starting to recognize now that there's a need to revitalize existing churches. And to talk about church revitalization today, I'm joined by David Brown. And David, you've got 40 years, you're from the UK originally, but you've got 40 years of church planting experience in France. You've planted three churches, you're in the process of planting another one in central Paris. And previously, people might know you as being the General Secretary of the GBU, which is the French student movement affiliated with IFES. And then you've been chairing the board of that group as well. And you're also involved in advising the European Commission on the National Council of Evangelicals too. So you've got a wealth of experience on this whole issue. So perhaps we could kick off by asking you, why do churches need revitalizing as well as planting?
Yeah, why do churches need revitalization as much as church planting? In fact, it's partly my experience that led me to this. I planted three churches in France, and the church I'm in at the moment is a church which was actually founded in about 1900. It's quite a rare animal in the French evangelical scene. And I realized going there that it was a very different situation than to plant a church. There were traditions, there was a whole history behind it. And when I went to this church, they'd just come out of a rather nasty split. And so I became very aware of the need for revitalizing an existing church. And I started asking around different people how would we go about this, and realized that very little work had been done on this in the European situation. In America, a big study was carried out by the Southern Baptists across the board, the different denominations in the USA, and they found that only between 10 and 15% of evangelical churches were healthy and capable of multiplying. Between 70 and 75% of those of churches in America were plateaued or slowly declining, and between 10 and 15% were in danger of becoming extinct. And when I saw those figures, I thought, wow, maybe we're not quite as bad as that in Europe. But the main reason for revitalization is this. If we want to cover the ground with churches, and in France, all the denominations have the aim of planting one church per 10,000 inhabitants all over France. If for every church we plant, a church disappears, we're never going to get there. So that's the real need for revitalization.
Those statistics are really quite stunning. And I guess similar research hasn't been done in Europe yet. But we would hope things are quite not quite as bad as in America. Maybe that's why they've got into this earlier. So what are the signs that a church needs revitalizing? How do you make that diagnosis?
I think the figures in Europe are probably slightly better. We did a preliminary study in France and thought about 50% of the churches were healthy and capable of multiplying. But that still left about 40% which needed revitalizing and 10% in danger of extinction. So what are the signs that a church needs revitalizing? It's difficult to say, but I think one thing is a gradual erosion in numbers attending the church. You don't see it at first, but little by little, as the years go by, you see the numbers are slowly declining. Another thing is that churches have fallen into a sort of routine. Nothing surprising happens, nothing unpredictable happens. It's people come to the service, they know what to expect, and that's what will happen. So this leads into, to paraphrase Rick Warren's expression, the preference-driven church, in which people like the way it is and are not prepared to change. And probably this is the most important thing, that as time goes by, culture changes, maybe the neighborhood changes, and the church is no longer really in phase with society and the neighborhood. And so it needs to get back into contact with the culture and the neighborhood.
Yes. So declining numbers, driven by preferences, out of touch with the culture.
Yeah.
And I guess not all churches in need of revitalization yet have insight into that. So what does a church need to do in order to be ready for revitalization?
Well, I think one of the first things we have to do is to put the question back on the agenda, and so that people realize that there is a real need to do this. All over Europe, church planting has been at the top of the agenda for many years. It's a really exciting thing to do. It's very attractive to young people having just graduated from seminary or Bible college. I remember reading a phrase from a professor of theology in a seminary in America, which is a little bit ironic, but he said, my postgrad students aren't handing their work in on time because they're spending their evenings designing the logo for their new church plant. and so it's a very exciting thing to do. And I think we need to put it back on the agenda and say, this is an exciting thing to do as well.
Yeah. How can local churches in an area help a church that's struggling in the same area?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that's always the right approach, mm-hmm. but it could be an approach.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to analyze the books coming out of the States, and they were suggesting at least 8 different approaches to church revitalization. Obviously, some of them are not mutually exclusive. But one of the approaches is that an existing flourishing church might take this church under its wing, either send people to help there, or possibly replace the leadership even, or people who like the campus model of church, this can become a campus of the mother church. There are different models which can be suggested.
And I guess, looking at this area, like church planting, we'd be wanting to look at the apostolic models in the New Testament. And is there much in the New Testament about church revitalization, either principles for doing it or examples of churches that had to be revitalized that we could learn principles from to apply?
I think I would give several answers to the question, what are the New Testament principles for revitalization? I think the first distinction to be made is there are 3 types of revitalization. The first is, what do you do with a church which is almost dying on its feet, which risks extinction? The second is, what do you do with a church which is plateauing and starting to decline? And the third question is, how do we make sure that a healthy church is being planted, which may be like preventive medicine, stop a church from going down that path? Mm. So in answer to the question, what New Testament principles do we have? I think there are 2 answers. Mm. The first is that the whole New Testament teaching is how to build a healthy church. So we want to see what the principles of a healthy church are and try to apply them. I would say, in one sense, it's fairly simple. It's loving God with all your heart. It's trusting Him with your life. It's obeying Him. Loving your neighbor as yourself. They're just the 4 basic principles, which have to be lived out locally, makes for a healthy local church. But when I come back to the question, the analysis, the church which is beginning to plateau, or the church which is in danger of becoming extinct, I think we have 2 very important chapters in the New Testament, Revelation 2 and Revelation 3,
mm-hmm.
which are the 7 churches, because the early church, maybe it had its problems, but when we see the letters to the seven churches, and I take it with the symbolic figure of seven, this is in some way saying these are messages to all the churches in all the ages of Christianity.
Throughout history, yeah.
So you see at least seven different situations there, and I think we can learn a lot from those two chapters.
Yes. Anything specific out of any of those seven church messages that you think applies in the situation?
In the seven churches in Revelation, we see different problems. One problem is external persecution of the church.
Yes.
Two other problems are internal, holding on to correct doctrine or fighting against sin and immorality. Yeah. And then we have another two, losing your first love,
yeah,
and
Ephesus.
Passing for being or seeming to be a live church, but you're dead.
Scientist,
so there are various different
yes.
aspects of it in those seven churches.
And I guess in a sense that all the letters in the New Testament, all Paul's epistles as well, are written to churches that might be in danger of needing revitalization if they don't stay on the straight and narrow.
All the letters of Paul are very realistic, and there is hardly a letter which doesn't have some form of exhortation or reproach towards the church. So this is not a new thing. The question for me is, how do we live these things out in today's European society?
Yes. And I guess a lot of what Paul was writing was addressed to the leaders of churches and how crucial leaders are in determining the direction and the trajectory in the future. So how can good leadership aid in church revitalization? And what does good leadership in church revitalization actually look like?
So what does good leadership in church revitalization look like? Leadership is obviously crucial. A colleague who's working with me in the European Leadership Forum reckons that 80% of the success of church revitalization is due to leaders. What is interesting is that the studies in the United States are very encouraging in that sense. 40% of churches which were revitalized did it without changing the pastor. And I think that's very, very important. And another interesting figure is that 75% of revitalized churches were revitalized by pastors over 40 years of age. So maybe that the younger people should be very interested in church planting, maybe that's normal, but there's a real role for those with more experience who maybe can bridge the gap between the older and younger people in the congregation and lead a type of revitalization.
And were these 75% of older pastors, were they people who were already members of the congregation, or had they been brought in to help revitalization, or was it a combination of the two?
Yeah. The 75% of pastors were obviously a combination, because as I said, 40% of churches were revitalized with the same pastor.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the model which is sometimes given, or the illustration which is sometimes given, is what you hear on a plane when the flight attendant tells you if the cabin is depressurized to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. And maybe leaders need to recognize first of all that there is a problem, and then from there work out what they can do with their church. Because I think the real problem we have at the moment with revitalization is that the need is not always recognized. And because it's not on the agenda, people just plow on and think, well, I'll just be faithful, I'll keep going. And that's obviously a very useful and important thing. Faithfulness and holding firm is important. But I think a lot of the leaders, whether it's the pastor or the elders of the church, are not aware that maybe things can be done to help the church come back, to use the expression of another book which was written in America.
Okay. And in these 40% of churches where the pastors didn't change, has there been much more research done in understanding how that revitalization came about. In other words, did those leaders, those pastors, have to adopt a different style of doing things?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if so, what helped them to do that? And was there any pattern of style that they needed to look at?
Has research been done on how churches were revitalized? Yes, some research has been done. I'm not sure that there's always a pattern which has the same pattern which has come out. And to be honest, no research has been done, as far as I know, in a European context, which may have different reasons for the need for revitalization. For example, in Eastern Europe, one of the reasons is that a lot of the churches were founded in the era just following the fall of communism, and now 20 years down the road, it's a problem. In other European countries, it's churches which have been there maybe for 100, 200 years and have failed to keep up with the culture. In other places, it's because, for example, a church in a mining town where the mine was closed and the steelworks were closed may find it difficult to hang on to young people who are going to go elsewhere to study at university and so on. So there are all sorts of different reasons. But fundamentally, I think the issue is the church prepared to make changes? Mm. Now, what the changes should be, in what way these changes should happen, I think that is what we're still doing research on. But something must change. Mm.
And I guess for that, the first has to be insight and recognition that there is a need for change.
Yeah.
And then to think about the kind of change that is going to...
Yes. I remember reading a sentence from a book on revitalization which said that it will only happen when the pain of not changing is greater than the pain of changing. So at some point people have to say, we must do something. We must change something.
How intentional does the whole thing have to be? What role does planning play in the revitalization of a struggling church?
What role does planning or strategic planning play in revitalizing a church? I think that probably any change must happen on three levels. There's the spiritual level. In the past, maybe people would have just said revival. And that's true. There must be a spiritual revitalization, a spiritual revival. On a second level, I think there's the need for social change. Maybe the people inside the church don't know each other so well. It's not a community. It's not so much a place of love. Maybe they're not praying together as a community, for example, and building relationships outside the church as the social level. And then the third element, which we mentioned, the planning must come as a necessary supplement to the spiritual and social change. In other words, once there's an awareness that, for example, the people in the church don't know each other very well, you try to plan more strategically. Maybe we should have a church meal every month or twice a month, and so you have to organize it so that people can get to know each other. The good intentions have sometimes to be planned and included in an intentional plan. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier the importance of culture, yeah. and the fact that sometimes what threatens a church and puts it on a downward trajectory is getting out of touch with the culture in which it's embedded.
Yeah.
So how important is it for a healthy church to be grounded in the local community in order to be thriving?
Yeah. I think it's very important for a local church to be in phase with culture and in phase with the local community, but they're probably two slightly different issues. the local community, for example, might have changed in the course of the years. It might have been a white middle-class area, which for one reason or another has become a place where more immigrants live. Or it
and
could
the
be
churches remain
and
white
the churches
and
remain
class.
White and the people have moved away yeah. and are driving into the church, so they're not in contact with the sort of people who live in the area. Yeah. Or the opposite can be true as well. An area can become gentrified, and so the people living in the area don't feel that they're more working class church they don't feel at home in the church, which is changing. So there is a sense in which the neighborhood can quite radically change over a few years. The question of culture is slightly different because, if you like, in missiological terms, we try to learn the culture of the country that we go to as missionaries. And we know that if we go 1,000, 2,000 kilometers to another country, have to learn the language and the culture and so on. And it's very easy to forget the culture can change chronologically as well as geographically. Mm-hmm. And the culture we're in now is very different from what it was even 30 or 40 years ago. So this doesn't mean that a church must necessarily have an up-to-the-minute worship band. That's not the issue. Music is almost a secondary issue in it. It's when we're preaching, when we're worshiping, and the style of relationship we have between us. Is this what people are expecting in today's world? When people come into the church, do they feel they're going into a historical monument, or do they feel these are people who are living in today's world? Mm-hmm. So that's why being aware of culture, being aware of issues. If you like, if you preach in a church and never mention terrorism or gender issues or questions like this, you're not in phase with where people's questions are today.
Yeah, you seem irrelevant, I guess. Does the situation ever get so bad that the best thing to do is for a church to close? Should churches ever choose actually to close down?
Yeah. Does the situation ever get so bad that a church may have to close down? Probably yes. Having been myself in church planting and knowing that in France in particular, you have to buy church premises because there's no other solution to meet on a Sunday morning, and having spent a lot of time and energy raising the money to buy this, it goes against the grain for me to say yes, a church must close down. But I think that in some cases it may be necessary for all sorts of reasons. But the real question is, can this church die with dignity? Mm. And can this church, for example, the church building may not be very well situated. Maybe it was in the center of the city, but now it's in the middle of a spaghetti junction of a motorway or something. Maybe it's best to sell that and use the money for a new church plant to set up just a little bit further away, for example. So I think it can die with dignity by actually selling the premises. In another situation, maybe it should die with dignity by saying, there are only six or seven of us left in this church. We have a nice facility in the center of the city. Maybe a church down the road who wants to set up a new church, we'll let them use our building. We'll give it to them. So it's not actually dying, but it's dying with dignity, so that what has been acquired over the years can be celebrated. The past can be celebrated. The older people in the church can say, "Yeah, our generation, we did a good thing, and this is now the we can help the new generation to plant new churches and so on."
Yeah, that takes a real spirit of generosity and grace, doesn't it? Because I guess there are some quite small churches which are sitting on big material assets in terms of property and central city locations. Yeah. It would be worth a lot of money.
And
could be freed up for God's kingdom.
Yeah, and I think it's all the more important that they should be, if possible, if they're well situated, that they should be kept and not sold off, because I feel in Europe today it's going to be more and more difficult to hire municipal buildings, school buildings. A church is seen as being not tolerant and so on. And so I think there'd be more and more refusal to use public property. So if the church must have its own property to be able to meet together.
Yes.
You could argue, and it's a form of revitalization to say that you will have smaller groups meeting and so on, but if a church is well situated, it could be really good. It would be good to keep that property, even if it meant investing in revamping it and making it into a more welcoming place to come to, for example.
Yes. Now, you said earlier that a lot of the work has been done on this issue in the United States, who are perhaps several years ahead of us on thinking through the issue of church revitalization. And I'm sure there are many different models. You've alluded to that as well. Are there any particular models of church revitalization that you think are especially suitable for a European context that we could learn from?
What kind of models which have been suggested in the United States would be useful in a European context? I think we're still trying to think this one out. It's one of the reasons why in the European Leadership Forum we're setting up a year-round mentoring. We have people from several countries and we're going to try to think through the issues. We're not presenting ourselves as experts in any way, so we need to learn together how to do it. But there are probably some models which could be useful. One of the models we've already talked about, which is an existing flourishing church helping a struggling church. A contrary model may be to say we can, within a struggling church, start something new. So, for example, this is my situation in Paris, where we set up an evening congregation for young professionals, which was very different to the style of congregation we had in the morning. We were able to be freer in the sort of things we did. We actually reduced the amount of worship time so that we only sing once or twice a month, because we found that a lot of young non-Christian professionals weren't that interested in singing. And this had a knock-on effect on the morning congregation, people saying, "Oh, you're doing some interesting things," and this enabled them to say, "Yeah, we can change, we can do new things." So I think that's another model we can go down without stopping what's happening, to start something else on the premises, as the same church but a different congregation, and finding ways of bringing them together with maybe some afternoon activities or a concert together or a Christmas meal together or something.
But you mentioned there's an ongoing mentoring program. How can people get engaged in that?
It's a very interesting thing that our year-round mentoring program was fully signed up even before the forum. And we consider this to be an indication that it's an important subject which we must be examining, and maybe hopefully next year we'll have another year-round mentoring program in place. A book is being written at the moment about the experience of a guy in Birmingham in the UK who revitalized the church. He went there a few years ago when there were only six or seven people in the congregation, and they are today around about 100 people, if I remember correctly. And so he started with a very small church, and he was a young guy straight out of seminary. And I think this would be an interesting book to read. I don't know the title, or the name of the guy.
Okay. David, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.